Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
And good afternoon for a Thursday edition of perhaps maybe the slowest week ever. It's slow to me. Maybe it's because of all the technical glitches and things that we've had around here.
No,
although
it's slow.
I think it is slow, right?
It's slow.
I don't know
why. This is the slowest week.
Because we had the holiday the week before, right, or a couple of weeks ago, and it just seems like we're now in the thick of summer, and it's just things are going a little slowly. But are we, Andrew? Can you give us on a scale of 1 to 10? Are we close to being you know, full speed here with the electronics and the equipment and all the problems that we've had?
I'm gonna give us a seven.
Some confidence. Oh, that's not bad, Sue.
It's a 7.
A 7? I'll take a 7 for sure.
The skeleton is there. The bells and whistles, yeah, not so much, but the skeleton is built.
The skeleton is there, Mark.
We have gotten through, and I do appreciate the help on that. A lot of stuff to get to this afternoon. We got a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane Duker, Gene Evans, former state senator Jeff Smith, Jim Talent's coming up this afternoon, former Missouri senator. We're going to talk about the Biden-Putin summit and some of the Supreme Court decisions today, and we have Sue's news in the next hour. Oh, I'm very excited because I don't often do this, but I definitely feel very confident that this is a smart move because Jean Becker was a fabulous interview a couple of weeks ago. She's the author of a book called The Man I Knew, The Amazing Story of George Herbert Walker Bush's post-presidency.
Great.
Yeah. So she's coming on at 4:25, and I have a whole list of things that we didn't talk about, including a story about Cheech of Cheech and Chong, which is pretty good.
I did not see that coming.
I know, right? Well, in this, I can't tell you any more than that,
okay.
But she's going to tell us, and she was lovely. And I can't wait to hear some more stories. So that's coming up a little bit later this afternoon. Vicki Hartzler, who just got into the Senate race. It says she's in town. I don't know. Is she coming by, Andrew? Have you been told? I don't know that that's happening.
I actually do not know if she will be
Fred
in town.
Fred didn't indicate if that was in person or not.
She will call us.
Okay,
so she'll be calling us over the phone.
So let me share a couple of things here as we get started. I want to get through some audio on the stuff with Joe Biden yesterday and Caitlin Collins, where the media is fawning all over him. But let me address this gun case in particular. Do me a favor, Andrew. Can you pull up STL today? Do you have a computer where you can do that right now?
I do. Let me do
and
that.
See
right
if you have a story. If you see a story on the gun case from Missouri, it was on the front page and the front site of the website today. But I don't know if it's still there. Do you see it up there?
St. Louis gun couple.
No, not the St. Louis gun couple. That's the McCloskeys.
The McCloskeys pleaded guilty
to like a misdemeanor or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, this is on the Missouri gun case.
They may have taken it off. Prosecutors pulled from violent crime case.
Hang on a second. I'm just going to do a Google thing. Why is that? That's hard to find. Well, the point I was going to make here is, I saw it this morning. I just can't find it now. They like to say that this particular issue that Governor Parson and the legislature was trying to void federal gun laws. There was no voiding whatsoever. So here's how I thought that Ed Morrissey did a great story, great job breaking this down. So the AP story on this case said this: the Justice Department is warning Missouri officials that the state can't ignore federal law after the governor signed a bill last week that bans police from enforcing federal gun laws. In a letter sent Wednesday night and obtained by the Associated Press, justice officials said the U.S. Constitution's supremacy clause outweighs the measure that Governor Mike Parson signed into law on Saturday. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the other way they could have written it. And I think this would have been pretty effective. The Justice Department is warning Missouri officials that the state can't ignore federal law after the governor signed a bill last week that bans police from enforcing federal immigration rules. Just envision if the immigration word was in place of gun. You can say that the new rules penalize local police departments if their officers enforce federal immigration laws. So if you do that with the AP story, and if the governor had signed a bill declaring Missouri an immigration sanctuary state, I don't think Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice would have done a damn thing about it. But you put guns in here. And by the way, I think that was kind of the point to begin with. I thought it was funny because maybe it was Senator Onder or somebody else was pointing out the fallacy of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch headline and said, what's been voided? There's been nothing voided whatsoever. They misrepresented that from the very beginning. All right, now you have the there's some fun audio here I have today and some really good contenders for audio cut of the day. But let's start with what happened yesterday with Biden and Caitlin Collins. Let's see. I got to go back to the original. Let's see here. This is the original from yesterday. I just got to make sure because everything's back in place today, so I'm a little thrown off.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time?
So
when did I say I was confident?
You said in the next 6 months.
I said what I said was
kind of nasty.
I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that, you're in the wrong business.
Okay, so he says, if you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business. Now, keep in mind that this was something that Trump did this with the media quite a bit. Uh-huh. He certainly did it with people at CNN. I said yesterday, I'm not even so sure that the president knew that was Caitlin Collins from CNN because it's hard for me to believe he would have done that.
No, he had no idea. And people were pointing out that he didn't even seem to know who it was. He was just snapping on.
Yeah, because if you listen, the audio is a little loose there, but he says, like, who are you? He even asked her, like, who are you with? She's one of the lead reporters on CNN. Not that Uncle Joe watches CNN. So he comes out, and this happened even before he left on the plane because he came out with another gaggle of reporters and said, I think I can see if I can get it.
I owe my last question an apology. I shouldn't have been such a wise guy with the last answer I gave. Anyway, thanks for being here.
Yeah, and he didn't even know. He said, my last questioner. All right, so under the circumstances that you just heard, there is a difference because Trump really wouldn't apologize, right? So I don't know if the analogy fits completely. But let's just say you had something like that that went down with President Trump and the media like it always did. They ran with that thing for hours, if not days.
Yes.
But Caitlin Collins is like, oh, it's okay because it's not Donald Trump. It's fine.
There he is apologizing for the way he responded to my question. That is completely unnecessary from the president. He did not have to apologize, though I do appreciate that he did there in front of the other reporters as he was about to get on Air Force One to go back to Washington.
Oh, come on, Mr. President. It's okay. Don't worry. You hurt my feelings a little bit, but we understand. We're going to give you a pass. And then if you don't think they're fawning over him enough, remember we had the Australian television folks, the media over there just making fun of CNN and all the media here because they're giving him such a break.
The handshake. Biden looked Putin in the eye with a smile. Putin looked away. Again, you don't want to read too much or too little, but again, these are about public posturing. It's about how you project strength. And that was a notable moment to me.
That's a notable moment. And here's more fun.
Bottom line is I told President Putin that we need to have rules of the road.
I'll play that for Jim. I thought that was actually more of the media fawning over Joe Biden. That was John Sciutto from CNN, the last one. All right. Then we have Lori Lightfoot. I have to get to this because I didn't get to it yesterday, and there's some follow-up audio. Lori Lightfoot is the mayor of Chicago. A couple things that came out about her this week. One, a bunch of emails where she's kind of abusing her staff. Did you see those, Andrew? She's like, she would have had to have copy and pasted a bunch of words because she wrote three different paragraphs where the words were exactly the same. Like, do not do this again. Do not do this again. Do not do this again. That might be not exactly accurate, but
it was pretty close.
Yes, yeah, things like that. And she put it like 30 times in a paragraph.
Okay.
So that was one thing. But this is interesting to me because, and I've seen the national media run with gun violence stories. It's gun violence stories. It's guns that are really the problem. And we'll talk about San Francisco just a little bit here, too. And I have to give credit yesterday because my guest from the University of Chicago, who was it? The professor, the law professor, said, look, when you had the guy that was busting into the Walgreens with the giant bag and filling everything up in San Francisco, it wasn't the bag that caused the crime, right? It was the dude on the bike that everyone ignored. But Lori Lightfoot talking about some things happening in Chicago.
I've been in touch with the White House, who reached out to offer supports, and I am grateful for the Biden administration. They've been great partners with us, but we all have more to do.
All right, play that next one, Andrew, because also, that's the one I think...
Charles Lipson was the...
Oh, yeah, Charles Lipson was the law professor. That's right.
We've got to redouble our efforts to call upon the federal government to help us stop the flow of illegal guns into our city. A lot of what we're seeing played out on social media, that there becomes a shooting, a beef from one person to another, one group to another. It's a completely different dynamic if there's no guns.
Okay, well, there are guns, okay? And you keep blaming all the national media stories want to talk about gun violence, which is ravaging the country. Gun violence is not ravaging the country. Gun violence is ravaging urban America. And if we're being completely honest, gun violence is only really ravaging a part of urban America, technically. Although in the city of St. Louis, we have murders in nearly every ward, which is really, really sad. So one more, I think, from Lori Lightfoot, because I think she's just... You have to realize that this is a woman who, of course, took it upon herself when kids are dying, when people are dying. She wants to talk about all this gun violence. She felt it important to make sure that she wouldn't do interviews or any sit-down interviews with white members of the media, only people of color, a couple of weeks ago. Remember that.
Oh, yeah.
We have done yeoman's work over the course of a very difficult year where every major city, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and on and on and on the list goes, have seen a similar surge in violence. And it is distressing.
Yeah, it's happening here in St. Louis. Do you know why it's happening, Mayor Lightfoot? Because you're not enforcing the laws on the book, and police don't think they can do their jobs, because if they try to do their jobs and something goes wrong, or if there is an interpretation of an event when they're trying to defend themselves that's not accurate, well, then their life is ruined. Not their career. Their life is ruined. Their family's life is ruined. So why in the world would they want to get involved in your city or any other city? Now, the answer to that is somewhat rhetorical, is they're professionals, and for the most part, they do their jobs well. And I understand that for law enforcement listening. But why would you want to do it for someone like Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago? Here's on Fox, Leo Terrell responding.
Lori Lightfoot, Donald Trump asked her if she needed help. She said, no, we don't have too many guns. We got too many criminals. And Lori Lightfoot is playing political gamesmanship. Now she's begging for the federal government to help. The federal government wanted to help her last year. She said, no, she is just an opportunist. Those are typical Democratic talking points. Okay.
Yeah, he's right. It's not too many guns, Lori Lightfoot. It's not too many guns, Tashara Jones, and even half the members of my roundtable who are Democrats. They want to talk about it's too many criminals, and the criminals are getting away with pretty much everything because they know then they can get away with things. So this is San Francisco, where this is happening and has been happening on a regular basis.
I feel like the theft is outrageous, and it's obvious that people are taking advantage of the fact that there's zero consequences. There's a high amount of crime, safety concerns, and quality of life has seemed to shrink tremendously.
Yeah, that's a business owner, a guy who owns a store in San Francisco. And of course, people are going to take advantage that there's no consequences. That's not too hard to figure out. This is Claudia Cowan on Fox.
For some stores, this is a daily event. Shoplifters walking in and walking out with whatever they want, even with security guards there, even with witnesses filming it all on their cell phones. It doesn't matter, because in most cases, nothing happens. The owner of this corner market tells me he has been broken into 14 times over the past year, despite 23 cameras that he says catch criminals in the act all the time. Like this thief who smashed a back window to get inside and left with cash and electronics. Another time, a man takes as many food containers and drinks as he can carry and walks right out the door without paying.
Again, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do this, given the climate that we're in right now? This is the guy who runs Walgreens out there on the West Coast. He's a regional VP, and he says, look, this is very organized.
You see the amount of theft in San Francisco versus some of our average stores in the company, that multiplier factor is really driven by the organized retail crime.
Yeah, it's what he's saying is this, look, they know what they're doing. They're going to get away with it.
Well, sure.
The guy didn't look too scared that went in with the bike, right?
Yes.
He wasn't even, that guy wasn't even in a hurry.
And if they're organized, they hit several stores at the same time. Nobody's going to do anything, and they get off with a lot of money, and it costs everybody money.
Here is Leanne Melendez, KGO.
It's hard for me as a journalist to say, I won't be involved. I can't get involved. I have to be sort of neutral. I live in the city, and I see this constantly.
And, yeah, it's her city. Well, I guess you have to be. No one else is neutral in the media. Why would you have to be?
What happened in that Walgreens has been going on in the city for quite a while. I'm used to it. I mean, we could have a greatest hits compilation of people just walking in and cleaning out the store shelves and security guards, the people who work there, just standing by helplessly because they can't do anything.
I mean, that's what they're dealing with, not only in San Francisco, but really, we have pockets of St. Louis that have to deal with that as well. 321, it's Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. We have St. Louis Aldermanic Board President Louis Reed. We can ask him about that. He comes by a little later. Jim Talent, former senator, next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
My takeaway is that Biden has no idea who Putin is. The entire democracy has collapsed in Russia. And here's what Biden doesn't understand. Putin could give a damn of what you think about him. The only thing he's going to respond to is when you threaten his power. And I saw nothing coming out of this summit threatening Putin's power.
I don't think anybody really saw that. Here is Senator Cotton. That was Senator Graham, of course. Senator Cotton in Arkansas.
I'm less concerned how Joe Biden stumbles and bumbles his way through describing Vladimir Putin than I am concerned about how Joe Biden behaves towards Vladimir Putin. And for the last 4 months, he has been pathetically weak. In the earliest days of his administration, President Biden extended the one arms control treaty we have left with Russia, a treaty that is badly one-sided in Russia's favor.
Former United States Senator Jim Talent is with me this afternoon to talk about the Biden-Putin summit. How are you, Senator? Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Mark. And I'm fine.
I'm guessing
those were two interesting clips.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Well, that was going to be my first question, that you don't really disagree with either of those clips, do you?
I don't. I would have put it more charitably. See, I wouldn't have asked for this. I wouldn't have had a summit. I certainly wouldn't have asked for one, because when we go in, when our leaders and Biden's not the only one to do this. Go into authoritarians like Biden and complain. And that's what basically these summits are. They think that they are exhibiting strength. But what the authoritarians are hearing is, oh, what I'm doing is hurting you and you don't know what to do about it. And, you know, so what I would prefer to see is is our presidents speak through their actions and really impose costs and consequences that Putin would understand for the things that he does. I think if we did that, we might see some progress pretty quickly, because Moscow is not Beijing. I mean, Putin is playing a much weaker hand. He plays it well. But I don't know how much he could stand up to it if we really had a consistent cost imposition policy.
Well, what would be the best way to approach that? I mean, even yesterday when he was talking about the Navalny situation, he said that there would be, I can't remember the exact words, but he was talking about harsh consequences. What? It's hard to take him seriously when he's talking about that.
Right. I'd rather just deal the consequences and not talk. In other words, let our actions talk. So, I mean, look, the very broad-based sanctions, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's easy to do. And Biden imposed some sanctions, but I mean, even the Washington Post said, hey, they're far too narrow. Listen, I would tell Cyber Command, which is our unified command in charge of our cyber capabilities, to give me a list of Russian targets. And every time there was a substantial cyber incursion in the United States that we attributed to the Russians, I would target them back in a proportionate way, but I would target the networks and the nodes that are meaningful to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, because yesterday, you know, Biden seemed very proud of the fact that he told Vladimir Putin, hey, guess what? How would you feel if you were in our shoes and something that was a main part of your economy shut down? And then he seemed to say that they opened up their eyes and said, oh, yeah, which I have a hard time believing that was the reaction. But really, if you want to get their attention, you have to do exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly right. Now, if Biden follows this up with action, then, you know, I'll revise my opinion. There are other things we could do. I'd give the Ukrainians what they asked. You know, Putin wants this hybrid war. He sends in the little green men. I'd help the Ukrainians. You know, he wants it. Let him get mired in a quagmire there. I'd fully fund the European Reassurance Initiative, which is American force posture in Eastern Europe. And I might talk to the Eastern Europeans about putting a base there with four or five armored brigades. We'd have to build up the army to do it. That would get Putin's attention. See, I think our leaders tend to Biden said something that was revealing at the press conference, Mark. He said he was asked by a reporter, you know, why do you think he's going to change his behavior? And the president got a little angry at that. But eventually he said, well, when he loses standing in the world, he'll react to that. Well, these authoritarians don't want to be liked. They want to be feared. Okay? And so in order to change their behavior, you can't just tell people not to like them. You have to impose costs that they understand.
Well, because you also have a president that's talking about, he's overseas addressing the troops in the United Kingdom, and he's talking about global warming. I mean, that seems to be the priority outside of some of these other more important issues globally.
Yeah, this conflation of other social problems with national security issues is a big mistake. And I'm not sure whether Biden's doing that because he really believes it or he's under pressure from his progressive wing or whatever. I mean, the armed forces, their mission is to deter war and then, if necessary, fight America's wars. And that ought to be the national security threats that we focus on. Heaven knows there are enough of them. I mean, as I said, the Russian threat is significant, but obviously the danger from Beijing is what the Pentagon calls the pacing threat. That's the one we have to plan against.
When it comes to Russia, though, what is the biggest threat? Because I know we talk about nuclear weapons. That was certainly an issue, and it's always going to be an issue with two superpowers. But it does seem like this cyber warfare is more imminent. It has happened and more dangerous and could potentially, obviously, you drop a nuclear bomb, Senator, I'm aware of the consequences there. But this stuff is happening, and the nuclear Holocaust stuff hopefully will never happen. So this is very real right now, and you have to have a solution for it.
Yes, you do. And again, there are levers that we can use against Putin that he would understand. What Putin would like to do is crack apart NATO. He would like to reassemble as much of the Russian Empire as he can in southeastern Europe. Look, he's occupied large parts of Georgia. He's annexed the Crimea. He is trying to get control of Ukraine. He has mass troops on the border, and he has threatened to roll into the Baltic states, which are members of NATO. He wants to control the Black Sea and the Eastern Med. I don't know if it'll have the naval power to do that, but we don't have the ships to be there either. He is stirring up trouble in the Middle East, which is a threat to Israel, which is an ally of the United States. He's the junior partner. He wouldn't admit that he's junior, but he is working more and more closely with Beijing on a number of issues, and he wants to control the Arctic. Well, these are all substantial interests of the United States that he's deliberately threatening. And I think we need to send signals. I'd rather, and look, this was the weakest area, in my opinion, of Trump's foreign policy. I think it was stronger than what Biden's doing by a long shot to this point. But I don't think we've been dealing with Putin correctly for a long time.
Former Senator Talent is with me this afternoon. I had Congresswoman Wagner on talking about her piece of legislation that goes after China. Is it realistic, and I support what she's doing, do you think you can get some sort of compensation from China along the lines, I suppose, is what we're talking about here with Russia in relation to COVID? Or is that just something that's pie in the sky?
Well, I wouldn't call it pie in the sky. And as a matter of fact, you know, the China experts have been mooting for some time how we can, you know, within the limits of our legal principles, because we're not going to be like them, but how we can use the judicial branch to react against some of these Chinese abuses. Now, obviously, you know, we have COVID-19 in front of us, but there's all kinds of instances where they do things to our companies, where they abuse their authorities, you know, they threaten and punish our companies if they put Taiwan on their website and this sort of thing. And this is all very damaging, not to mention, you know, their violations of all the trade rules. And a lot of there's been a lot of discussion about how to use the judicial power to remedy that. Now, it's not easy, but I'm glad Congresswoman Wagner is exploring it. It's going to take a lot of work, but it's a good idea.
Where are you? You know, you and I had a great conversation several months back because when you were in the United States Senate, you worked on the pandemic response, and you know, you're very knowledgeable on that particular forefront. But we do seem like we've gone forward here in this country significantly, almost as if the pandemic is over. But then you have the St. Louis Post-Dispatch this morning, big story on the front page about the new variant and some of the things that are happening with that. I've seen some coverage about what's happening in Chile and other locations. The media keeps wanting to scare people. Do you feel relatively safe right now, given the nature of the vaccines?
Yes. I think that by virtue both of the vaccinations that we've done, and also the natural immunity that we've acquired, and all this, all the evidence is, and this is the basic understanding with viruses anyway, that if you get the virus and recover, you have substantial natural immunity, and it appears to be very long lasting with this because we've not had a lot of reinfections. So I think we've reached the point where, at least in most places, and certainly in our areas, where the pandemic has, it's not a pandemic. In other words, it's become endemic. Now, we're never going to get rid of it in the sense that it's going to be lurking. But so many people, I think, are immune now that the vectors of transmission for the virus have been substantially cut off.
And I think you're right about that. I guess the focus of the Missouri angle just a little bit here, and I was unaware that we were as low as we were when it comes to vaccinations. California, very high. Some of these other states are very high. Missouri is hovering, I guess, the figure that I saw was only 24-25%. So that would be of some concern, wouldn't it?
What, of vaccinations? But we also have all the people who've gotten in and recovered.
Right.
And we can look at the infection rates and especially the hospitalization rates, and we can see how low they are. So, look, you can't be certain with a virus. That's part of the problem, particularly a highly contagious virus. And by the way, we're getting an idea now of why it's highly contagious. It may have been actually engineered to be highly contagious.
Right.
Because they're highly contagious viruses, Mark, are good at spreading. That's why they're highly contagious.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how the lab leak story is all of a sudden getting, you know, a little bit more attention suddenly?
Yeah, it really is. And I did read a story earlier this afternoon when one of the scientists who signed a letter in February, which helped break it open, said, we feel like we can talk about it now.
Because they don't want to help Trump, right? That was one of the reasons they put the kibosh on it. I saw that as well.
And I can tell you, in terms of pandemic response, communication in pandemic response is a hugely important piece of the whole system, okay? And you have to attempt and succeed most of the time in communicating honestly and openly with people. Okay, you don't want to speculate on things you don't know, and pandemics.
Too late.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of too late. Yeah, right.
It's extremely distressing, and the people in the public health community need to pay attention to this because their credibility has really been undermined. And the idea that somebody, that scientists would not tell people about something that's important in the middle of a global pandemic because they're afraid of the political consequences.
That's pretty shameful.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible. They were afraid it was going to help the Trump administration and the president himself. 339. Senator Talent, always great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, Sue's News after the top of the hour. We're going to check in also with meteorologist Dave Murray because it is hot out there and it's going to get hotter this weekend. So we'll have a little bit more on the weather with Dave in the 4 o'clock hour. And then I'm really looking forward to this. Is very rare. I'm having a repeat guest from a few weeks ago, Gene Becker, who was the personal assistant to 41, George Herbert Walker Bush. And some of the stories involves Cheech Marin of Cheech and Chong, which I'm going to focus on this afternoon. So that'll be fun, too, in the next hour. Aldermanic Board President Lewis Reed is in the studio with me this afternoon. I don't even know if we have enough time to talk about some of these things that you're hot over. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Mark?
Good. Let me start with, because one of the headlines today is about the workhouse and, consolidation.
Yeah.
Because you want to do everything. We have a crime problem in St. Louis, but you want to make sure that you take care, first and foremost, of the criminals. Is that my understanding?
Absolutely.
What is going on with that?
Well, look, I think that is a mistake for them to overcrowd the CJC, Downtown Justice Center, in their efforts to try to empty out MSI, the work, which is known as the workhouse. CJC, we know, have problems with its locks and everything else. And once you reach an overcrowded situation or 80%+ of its operational capacity, you have to remove certain rights that the inmates would have, which means that any enrichment programs like classes and all of those types of things that they need so that then when they come out better, right? All of those things are removed in overcrowded situations. So what they reported today was that they were going to be over 95% capacity in CJC. It makes no sense to me, especially when we have a facility in town called MSI that is more secure than CJC, which we've had three uprisings in.
Do you agree? The new public safety director, the former chief of police, Dan Isom, said there has been a community outcry to close the outdated facility that has been plagued with problems, unsanitary, and inhumane conditions. Has there been an outcry, or has there just been some progressives and Mayor Jones and others that want to close? I don't remember an outcry. If the Post-Dispatch editorial board qualifies as an outcry, then I guess it's an outcry. Although they were on the other side, weren't they?
They're not supportive of closing.
Right.
The
So even the Post-Dispatch isn't supportive. Now, you told me something else. Can you reveal this now with the feds and an offer that they made?
Yeah. So it came to our attention today that the feds sent an intergovernmental agreement to the current administration that said, hey, we've reviewed the workhouse, MSI, right? And we would like to enter into an agreement with the city to house all of our detainees there. Now, here's what that means to the city. Each detainee that we hold, right, mm-hmm. for the feds, we make somewhere in the neighborhood of $92 to $95 a day, wow. right? So across 30 inmates across a year, ain't millions of dollars
right.
of revenue, which is going to go to some municipality. Now we here are sitting here with a big hole in our budget.
So basically, just so I get this straight, so if there's that offer that's on the table, that the Jones administration could take advantage of that, but by closing the workhouse, that sort of shuts that off.
They've not just closed the workhouse, but they've also nixed the federal the contract
right, right.
to house federal
okay.
detainees.
I just want to be clear on that.
Yeah, because we were already holding federal detainees because of the feds.
I got you. So it's actually two. It's kind of an attack on two fronts. Yeah, I was misunderstanding that.
It's a double loss. So on an average year, the city of St. Louis, we would receive somewhere in the neighborhood of $9 million a year to our general revenue. From the feds, just by housing federal detainees, people that they need held over for whatever reason, right? The current administration said we will no longer house federal detainees, so the feds said, okay, we now will send them someplace else. So who got that windfall? It'd be places like St. Louis County. I know they sent people out to Kentucky, all over the place. They dispersed them from the city of St. Louis. What that meant to us. Right now, we're sitting with an unbalanced budget with a $5.7 million hole in it that we now have to figure out where to come up with an additional $5.7 million just to backfill.
But here's where it might be confusing for people. So you have this big windfall from the feds anyway, $500 million that's getting funneled into the accounts of the city. How can you have a $5.7 million shortfall? I know there's procedure here with the budget, but that doesn't seem, I think, to people listening to make sense with all this money coming in.
Yeah, here's the thing. We should not look at that the additional money for COVID relief to just backfill areas that we've just decided, okay, we do not no longer want to take a revenue stream like housing the federal detainees, right? Because we have so many challenges and so many problems in the city and so many things that need real funding based on the impacts of COVID on our system, that if we begin to divert those funds to things that aren't related to COVID, we're not using the money the way it was supposed to be used. Those funds weren't given to us so that we can have an exchange in dollars.
To replace the budget hole that you already have. Right. So what's the end game? How does this get fixed? Because as the story has it, the narrative is you're on one side here, maybe some other members of the board, Tashara Jones, Darlene Green, the comptroller on the other side of this. So how does this get figured out?
Well, here's where I'm at with it. We have for the first time since I've been here in city government, and the budget director, it's been 30 years and he had never seen it before, that we've passed a budget out of the Board of ENA that then goes to the Board of Aldermen and we deliberate on it and we work on the budget. In the process of the Board of Aldermen working on the budget, the mayor's office removed the revenue stream that was part of the budget that included funding for various different things, right? Inmates, meals, and things of that nature. But that came from the federal detainees, the contract for federal detainees. She nixed that contract. Now, state law, Missouri state law, requires any municipality that votes on a budget, that
right.
budget must be a balanced budget. We have a balanced budget amendment in the state of Missouri. Lawfully, now the Board of Aldermen, for the first time, we cannot vote on the budget. Now, here's what we have to do moving forward. Since we cannot vote on the budget, and next week is the last meeting of the Board of Aldermen, and we have to have...
Oh, I know. You guys got to have time off. You got to have your vacation.
Not time off. You don't really get time off at the board because stuff doesn't stop moving. But our last meeting of the full board is next week. Doesn't mean that business stops, right?
Right.
But the last full meeting is next week before July, right? So we have to have a budget passed by July 1, and if we don't, the budget that they sent over from ENA automatically becomes law.
Okay, but I know I was kind of joking, but you do have a big summer recess that kicks off in July too, right?
Well, mid-July, the board goes down.
But the timetable is affected by all these things to a certain extent.
But the main thing is that by law, we have to have a budget passed by June 30th.
Right, got it. Aldermanic Board President Lewis Reed with us. As we wrap up, as I was starting the show, President Biden was signing the law today to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. Reaction to
that's
that?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great news.
I think it's you know, the only issue that I would have, I have no issue about this particular holiday, is just how many federal holidays do we have? And by the way, that doesn't necessarily mean the federal government, I think, gets days off. I'm sure the city, does that kick in like tomorrow?
Well, we remember last year, I worked on a measure last year to make it a holiday in the city of St.
Louis. I didn't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, so
did that pass?
Yes.
Okay,
yes, so
is that is tomorrow a holiday for the city of St. Louis?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And
because, again,
Mayor
city workers need more time off, Lewis. So I would anything we can do to get them more time off, especially after a year of working in their basements where we're not sure what they're doing. I'm for it.
And I'm glad you support that, Mark.
Great to see you. Take care, Lewis Reed.
All right,
get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.